our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
No, Jezelman, but I'm just going to call him G-Spot from now on. Okay.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I could pull up those leaderboards, but, I mean, you said Giants offense, and I just kind of stopped caring, so.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Oh, it wasn't an us. Don't worry. I've been sitting here with my thumb in my ass for 5 minutes. Don't worry. I didn't have any comments about Clayton Kershaw or Max Scherzer or Craig Kimbrell.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Ben Brenz. I am joined tonight by Evan Peterson. How are you doing tonight, Evan?
I'm doing great. I was doing a little research before we fired the mics up, and plenty of knowledge to share with you guys on whatever subject you ask. Ben, what would you like to know about?
I don't want to know about what you were researching before the show. I don't think our fans do. I don't think anyone in their right minds want to know what you were researching before the show, so please don't share.
Yeah, well, I'm not for people of the right mind, so if that's what you came for and that's who you are, you may be slightly disappointed.
Well, if that's the case, then I guess we should bring in our other host, Chuck Anderson, since he falls right in line with that exact sentiment. How are you doing tonight, Chuck?
I am doing just fine. I mean, it is generally our job every week to keep Evan somewhat in line, which we only do a semi-proficient job of doing.
I'm glad that you give us the fact that I'm glad that you say we do a semi-proficient job. I didn't even think we did a proficient job. So that's kind of a compliment, I think, for us.
That's true. I mean, he's by the time you get done with the editing, he's more on task than he is off task, which is a tribute both to your editing and to our efforts, really.
That's the magic of it.
It's really hard for me to edit some of the stuff, because some of the stuff I just have to cut like entire segments, because he just goes so far off the rails, it gets so confusing.
Well, at least if I'm going to take it off the rails, I'm going to be considerate and ask you, hey, can you hear the porno video playing in the background while we're recording or not? And, at least I've got you guys covered there.
And that's the end of our show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back never.
Stick around.
We just got canceled by Justin Mason. Thanks a lot.
That's all right. We'll make it through. I'm excited to talk baseball. Enough with the fun stuff. Ben, how have your fantasy teams been doing?
Well, I have at least two separate teams that I have one-third of my rosters on the DL. Both of them have 28 players or more. One of them has 40. And they're 16. One league is 16, one league is 20 teams. So there's absolutely no depth. I'm actually having to consider picking up Matt Garza so that I can fill a reasonable rotation, because I even have six relief pitchers who are all hurt and I just don't have anyone to pick up. But I'm in second place in at least one league, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, it's been that kind of year. Chuck, do you have a rant on how your season's going, or
do I
want to get you going here?
You can get me going, because it's going to happen. Okay, I had an epiphany tonight. Do you know what an epiphany is, Evan?
I've heard of it. Don't ask me to spell it, but yeah, I've got a general idea of what you're talking about.
Well, earlier tonight, I started watching baseball, as I usually do, and all of a sudden, Carlos Carrasco was against Chris Archer. Okay, and I realized that these are two guys that are number two starters in any size, any league of any size, above a 10-team league. Okay, neither one of them had a clean inning through the first four innings. Then Carrasco left hurt. Okay. Chris Archer walked five guys. He had given up three hits, five walks, and had already given up seven runs. I've never seen anything like this pitching landscape, and it amazes me, and I would like us to talk about that. But I also want to mention something that Ben pointed to. I will never, under any circumstances, play in a weekly fab league again.
Yeah.
Because it is impossible to keep your roster updated or try and defend four or five different areas of people going on this 10-day DL thing with, you know, with trying to do it once a week. In one league this week, I put in for 11 players. I got three of them, right? Because everybody needs players. So I got three of them, and now I'm going to spend the entire week with two open spots in my roster. And I really don't think that's the idea of fantasy baseball.
Yeah. I just want to piggyback off a point you said, and then I'll kind of get Ben's take on the whole scenario. But I had posited this in the staff chat that with the shift in the DL, and it might just be a crazy year, or it might be teams taking advantage of the system. Does this decrease the popularity of fantasy baseball going forward if people are like, well, why the hell would I want to play if everybody's just going to get hurt and it's going to be a pain in the ass to manage my DL all the time? I know Chuck may have sided with me a little bit. I didn't really hear Ben's voice in the conversation, so I'd like to hear his thoughts.
I mean, I don't think it's going to necessarily decrease. I think it will. What it will do is I think it will decrease from people playing in A, deeper leagues, and B, newer players potentially coming in and giving it a shot and then returning after the season if they have too many injuries. Now, I don't think that the amount of players that we've DL'd this year is really far off pace from what we had last year or even the year before, but I think because it happens so frequently now, more so than what we had last year, because we've had more players getting actually hurt this year for a longer period of time, it just feels like that because they've got so bunched up that it feels like that there's a lot more people that are hurt than what there actually is. Now, you have players that will go into DL for 10 days and come off after day 11, so that will happen, and that wouldn't have happened in games last year, but you would have players that are like what Robinson Cano is currently right now. You have day-to-day for 5-6 days. Mike Trout did the same thing within the last week and a half. You have players like that that still go day-to-day, and they would have gone day-to-day last year, and now you actually have the ability to potentially put them on a DL spot. So I think that if we do increase the amount of spots that a league is able to have for the DL, it makes it a little easier to actually start maneuvering stuff rather than having a player who's day-to-day and just going to sit on your bench and actually take up one of your, you know, maybe you only have 5 bench spots, and he's going to take that up. You now have the potential to put that player on the DL and go pick up someone for that 10 days. So I think there is some benefit to that, which I think will make it easy for some fantasy players, but it may deter people from going, say, 16 to 20 teams deep because they may not be as knowledgeable or may not have the patience to try to go through, just like what Chuck was saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to go through a fab week like our staff league. That's 16 teams. That's like 28 players. I had for 2.5 or 3 straight weeks, I didn't have a starting outfield of 5 players because I kept missing players on fab, and it wasn't that I just was not bidding enough. It's that the players that were being bid on had to go for high, high prices because everyone was losing a ton of outfielders. So as a result, you know, I can't really start anyone. I had to go pick up Magnerius Sierra for 2 weeks or 10 days or however long he's actually going to be up because I didn't even have anyone to fill in. Like, I have Martin Prado sitting on my utility spot as a DL player because I don't have anyone else to add, and my DL is full. There's just no players for me to put on. Like, that's how overflowed my team is. So it's a shame, but you'll get stuff like that that makes owners that are in deeper leagues have to think about stuff, and they may not want to put up with that, especially if this keeps happening throughout the year. I think if the rest of the year goes a little smoother, people may lighten up. But the first 2 months have not been pretty for fantasy owners.
And if I can try and put the 2 points together, I mean, I was going to mention that I thought Evan had a very good thought for him. It must have been a clairvoyant moment, which we don't
for
usually...
Him?
For you, yeah. It was a very clairvoyant moment for you, my friend, when you mentioned that this could be a deterrent to people getting into the hobby that we love so much and we podcast about every week. I also want to mention that I think something that plays into what's going on is when I mentioned the stuff about the pitching, okay? If you think about the top tier of pitchers, the only top tier pitcher who's pitched well and hasn't been hurt, right, is Chris Sale, okay? So if you don't own Chris Sale, you're very, very disappointed with whoever your number one starter is, okay? Assuming no one has Dallas Keuchel as their number one starter because he's been the next best starter, okay? Everyone else has been hurt or disappointing. Everyone. It's not like I'm sugarcoating things. Everyone else has been bad. Okay. So when I say that could add to the deterrence of people wanting to play in the future, don't you need some kind of an anchor that you're drafting someone that you think you're going to actually get something out of? John Lester's been bad. Verlander's walking everybody under the sun. All the big names in the sport and the best pitchers. What's happened with pitching in the last 2 years is 2 years ago, we thought there was like 30 aces. Okay. And so we started drafting pitching. Okay. And then we're like, oh boy, like a third to a half of these pitchers aren't any good. We made a mistake. We shouldn't draft so many pitchers. Now this year, what we have is an absolute landmine that almost no one is getting through. And the pitchers who are pitching bad, like if you had Carrasco and Archer, right, despite the fact that they're pitching bad, you have to run them out there because you're not going to pick up Wade Miley off of waivers and start them instead of Chris Archer.
It's weird that you say Archer is pitching bad and he's 16th on the player rater. I don't understand if there's a disconnect to what you're saying or he hasn't been as bad as you think he's been or what exactly is going on there.
It could be that he's not as bad as I think he was, but he was dreadful tonight, which isn't involved in the player rater yet.
True.
But, just the point being is that the people that we thought were aces are generally not aces. And that says something that Chris Archer is 16th on the player rater because I have never heard anyone in any of my leagues be bragging about how well Chris Archer is playing. I mean, he might be pitching relatively good compared to the other number one starters. And he wasn't even a number one starter, by the way, on any team that I saw.
It's also funny. Carrasco. The other name you threw out there was Carrasco, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, would you want to guess where he is on the player rater? Not factoring in today, obviously.
And the fact that he left her today after that?
Yeah, but before today.
Okay, I don't know, maybe somewhere in the 30s, 40s?
Ben?
He's number five.
He's number five, yeah, so he's also been having a really good year.
To build off of what Chuck was saying, the pitchers that you were expecting to have a great season, they have not. Out of the top 20 pitchers, starting pitchers this year, nine of them were drafted outside of pick 147 in ADP, and one of them is a reliever.
Yeah,
so you're looking at exactly half of the top 20 who is players that no one expected to come out of nowhere. Oh, no, you have Keuchel, you have Ervin Santana, you have Jason Vargas, you have Dylan Bundy, Alex Wood, you have Mike Leake, Andrew Triggs, Raisel Iglesias, Antonio Sensatella, and Ivan Nova. And then you have other players that, you have Lance McCullers, who's outside as well. He's number 17, so technically there's 10 players. You got a player like Paxton, who was drafted later. You have a player like Fulmer, who was drafted pick 132. There's not a lot of top-tier guys that are really performing well, and the more that I keep actually looking at the player raters in ADP, you have almost 75% of the players in the top 20 that were drafted outside pick 130, which is absolutely phenomenal that you have players that are performing this well, but also extremely disappointing that you have players that you pick early that aren't performing, I have Jacob DeGrom in a bunch of leagues. He's not performing to the level that I expect him to play. Obviously, not everyone's going to get lucky, but, Carlos Martinez hasn't performed as well as everyone thought. Steven Strasburg hasn't performed as well as everyone thought. Hell, look at players like Charlie Morton and AJ Griffin. They're having a lot better seasons than anyone expected. The starting pitching landscape right now is absolutely haywire. No one knows what the hell is going to happen, and you basically just have to get extremely lucky because you can pick up anyone and they could just go and be a top 30 pitcher, but then you can have someone that you drafted in the top 30 picks and they're not they're not a top tier person. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
You guys are being nice to me too because you guys didn't mention that I didn't mention Scherzer, and Scherzer's obviously been pretty good, and yeah. Kershaw's been pretty good as well. It's just a matter that I think some of the allure of fantasy football, okay, which is obviously fantasy baseball is always kind of trying to chase fantasy football in a way, you know, and us on the show, we think fantasy baseball is far better than fantasy football, I imagine. But the point being is that you have people you can draft in fantasy football that you can count on, okay? In pitching, which is half of fantasy baseball, right, there's been two pitchers in the top 30 that you expected to get a lot out of that you're actually getting anything out of. So drafting half of the sport feels like almost like a crapshoot. And when a guy like Madison Bumgarner, who's known to be one of the most durable and consistent pitchers in the sport, is going to shake everyone's confidence even further with the actual, you know, with that actual half of our hobby. And there's things I really don't like about it. And I don't like the 10-day DL either. So that's why I'm trying to tie the two things together, because the 10-day DL means everyone's biggest complaint about fantasy baseball is that it can be too much work because it happens every single day. Well, if you multiply the amount of spots on your roster that you're going to have to keep funneling people through, I think that's going to add to that gripe with the borderline player. We're enthusiasts. We're going to be involved no matter what. But I am concerned. I don't like the direction that fantasy baseball has gone this year at all. And my pitching analogy, I would like to extend on to closers. Okay, of the top closers that everyone drafted, I want you guys to tell me how wrong I am. Of the top closers, I think of two of them that have performed how we thought they were going to. One of them being Kenley Jansen, and one of them being Craig Kimbrell. Okay?
To be fair, I don't even know if people expected Craig Kimbrell to actually be as good as he has been this year. That people probably expect him to be maybe the fifth best closer, maybe just outside of that. I don't know if people expect him to come back to the levels that he is. These are like when he was on the Braves type level, and people haven't seen this for what, maybe 2 years, and I think people were starting to get a little sour on him. So I think it's good to see that he's come back. But I do agree with you. There aren't a lot of closers that people have really expected. Look at how good Greg Holland's done, Wade Davis has done. Hell, even Brandon Kinsler is a top five closer right now because are close to it, because there's just, you know, the closing aspect has gone up in flames as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's going to add to people's frustration with trying to draft half of the game. Now, the other side of it is that the hitters have done relatively well. I mean, especially compared to what the pitchers have done. Okay, I mean, obviously there's been some pitfalls, because there always is going to be. Even in fantasy football, there's pitfalls too, you know. But at the same time, I'm discouraged about how pitching has gone over the last 2 years, because I do think that it's not lending itself to getting more participants into fantasy baseball. And between that and the DL, I think that I want to see the ship right itself here for the rest of the year. And hopefully we figure out as an industry the best way for people to deal with this going forward, to make it more attractive for people to get involved in it. Because, you know, it does help the hobby if there's people that you know of. They're names you know and you can trust. And a lot of those names have gone by the wayside this year. And the youth, between the youth movement and baseball itself, a lot of these guys that are the Aaron Judges of the world that are coming out of nowhere, etc., between that and the DL and underperforming and injuries, and I'm worried right now, and I don't want to be long term, because I do think fantasy baseball can be like the best activity of the year by far. And right now it's not playing out that way this year. And even when my patience is being tested, I know that there's got to be a lot of people in the back of their mind saying, boy, I don't know that I would want to go through this again.
I think that this is the type of year that really points out that a player like Mike Trout is always like someone that you can always bank on. You know, there's people who come in and then go and look at someone like Mookie Betts and they're like, oh, well, he's going to be in the next best thing because of what he did last year. But then you have Mike Trout, who does the same thing, and he's so consistent every single year. And you don't have that consistency. And this year shows how inconsistent people like Ryan Zimmerman, who's basically a fantasy zombie at this point, and he hasn't been doing anything good for the last two or so years, maybe three, I think, if I recall correctly, in terms of fantasy. And now all of a sudden he's a top 10 player in fantasy at this current time. But then you have too many players like that. You have the pitching, which is a mess. Hitting is kind of a mess. So it's nice to have someone that you can rely on. And it's like you said, Chuck, there's not a lot of players that you can really rely on. And that does hurt the sport. I think that does hurt the fantasy baseball sport.
All right. Thank you guys for letting me vent.
Somehow your vent turned into us having like a 20-minute conversation.
Oh, it wasn't an us. Don't worry. I've been sitting here with my thumb in my ass for 5 minutes. Don't worry. I didn't have any comments about Clayton Kershaw or Max Scherzer or Craig Kimbrell or Brandon Kinsler or anything that you guys just talked about. So,
yeah,
so.
That's what we thought. That's why I kind of like cut you off. So, Evan, is there anything you want to add about those players?
No. Craig Kimbrell's not walking anybody. Kinsler's a volume play because he's getting a ton of saves. He sucks ass. He gives up a ton of contact. And I think it's funny you were talking about the pitfalls at pitching. Clayton Kershaw and Max Scherzer were probably the two biggest question marks at the top. People didn't want to pay for Kershaw because of the minefield. At starting pitcher, Scherzer had the injury, and they both came back and kind of gave a big middle finger to everybody and have been awesome. Not as awesome as Chris Sale, but... yeah, that was all I had to say, but thank you for letting me take a nap. I'm ready and energized to talk about some Fringe dudes. Woo!
That would be a good spot for some intro music.
Matt Caesar, woo!
All right, Chuck, man, why don't you start us off then?
No, I wanted to hear about Matt Caesar, but we can talk about Mike Minor. I mean, he gets me excited too. I know a lot of people are kind of looking sideways at me right now, like, why the hell are you talking about Mike Minor? But we're talking about a crazy pitching landscape. We're talking about a guy who was actually pretty good before some injuries kind of derailed him. And last year, the one FWFB appearance I made, me and Chuck were actually pimping to hang on to Mike Minor in like deep DL spots in like midsummer. He finally pitched a couple of innings that weren't just solo innings, or a couple outings that weren't just solo innings. So he might get stretched out a little bit. He's got strikeouts. The popular term of now, I guess, would be like a Chris Davinsky extra light. But, you know, with this 10-day DL that we just talked about for 20 minutes, Minor's a guy that could come up, and if there are injuries in this rotation, a guy that could be thrown in, and if he was stretched out, a guy that could be not horrible. So I think he's an interesting guy to kind of speculate late on.
I think the league has to be pretty deep since, I've seen him, his earliest work this season sort of coined as, you know, almost loogie style stuff where he was coming in to face two out of three lefty batters, et cetera, and so forth. I do find him to be an interesting arm. I mean, Alex Wood is a guy who's come back from a couple arm injuries and all of a sudden, you know, now it looks like he's pretty electric. So, and his body of work is filthy ridiculous. You know, the ERA is ultra low in the low twos, I believe, and his whip has been very good. So, and now more so than ever, I've gotten to the point in some of my deep leagues where it just really doesn't pay for me to pick up and speculate on guys I don't have any belief in whatsoever. So I've gotten to the point where I feel like I'm better off with some of these middle relief guys that I actually like their stuff and like their chances to succeed while they're on the mound versus picking up guys versus picking up guys who might only end up going four innings at best anyway. First of all, you can pick any Brewer starter you want that's not named Matt Garza. Like, Zach Davies has been absolute garbage. Willie Peralta, everybody was pimping him for two starts this week. I dropped him, okay, because I've seen it developing. Like, he has no chance of pitching out of the sixth inning on a regular basis. None. So if you're, like, in a quality start league, like our staff league is, well, then there's no reason to own him. I mean, he can get blown up for seven runs like he did yesterday on any given start, but how often is he going to pitch through six and only give up three runs? So I do think it's important to start looking at guys like this. I picked up Erasmo Ramirez in a league this week because I thought, well, he's pitching really good. He's pitching two or three innings at a time. Now it looks like he might get thrown back into the rotation as they've had some injury problems in Tampa now, and they don't appear ready to bring up Honeywell. So Erasmo Ramirez might actually get some starts, which I actually would prefer him not to do, just because I don't want to see him on a roller coaster or, you know, up and down and up and down. But the point being is that I appreciate you pointing out guys like Minor who seem to really be coming on in a longer relief role, because I think those are the kind of guys that we're going to have to use as staff glue while we're waiting for the Paxtons and Klubers and all these other elite pitchers to get back from DLs.
I don't think you want to call these guys staff glue. I think you need to come up with another term. But I like the concept, if you will. Ben, what do you like about Minor?
I mean, I do because of the type of leagues that I play in. I play in some points leagues that holds count. I play in dynasty leagues where saves and holds count. I play in deep leagues where, you know, you have to go for a player like Mike Minor who gets strikeouts and gets good ratios with the ability to potentially get saves or wins because of the position and the high leverage situations he gets put into. You know, I'm used to drafting or at least picking up or looking into players like this. So I am a fan of Mike Minor as a reliever. It's a shame that his career as a starter is basically over because of all the injuries that he's had. He did have some good years, but I do think that he's settled into a role, and we have seen starters that have settled into roles as really, really good relief pitchers. And if he's able to turn into a Davinsky-type player who can go two or three innings and get a ton of Ks and get over 100 strikeouts per year, maybe like five or so wins, maybe 3 to 5 saves by the amount of innings and games it gets put into, then I think that's a valuable piece which no one is really looking at, and you can utilize that in really deep leagues.
Yeah. The one thing I didn't really look at when I was doing my research, and I'm now just kind of scanning over, is kind of his contract incentives. So, like I said, I think he could find a spot start. Like, I don't think he's going to start more than, like, maybe 5 games all season,
There was a report that came out earlier late last week, that stated he's most likely not going to do any spot starting, and that's what Ned Yost said. Now, I don't take everything that a manager takes to heart, but they stated okay. that if he's not able to get past 60 pitches, it doesn't make sense for him to spot start for them, and they don't think that he can get past 50 or 60 without really hurting himself, and they don't want to really risk it, so they'd rather him not spot start if they can avoid it.
Yeah, the number, I'm not really looking at pitch. Well, I mean, pitch counts kind of count here. He can also pick up 165K apiece upon hitting his 11th through 20th starts, and another 165K for every 5 innings tallied between 75 and 120. So they're probably going to, you know, curtail in there. He also stands to earn 225K upon reaching his 12th start, with another 225 due every other start. So, not going to see, even if there was a lot of injuries, probably not going to see a ton of run, but here and there, I think what you were saying about long relief role is definitely the more highlighted point here. So
it's always good to have a pitcher like him, though, because he's the type of player who, in a relief role, is going to have a 9K per 9.
Yeah.
And that's kind of valuable. There's a lot of leagues that are now playing K per 9 instead of strikeouts. There are leagues that do count saves and holds as opposed to just saves. So a player like him is going to be good, especially if he's able to keep a sub-2.5 ERA and he's able to have around a 1 to 1.1 whip. He's below both of those numbers now. He could easily regress given the fact that Kansas City is just not a good team in general, so things could fall apart if they start trading off pieces. But I do think that if they start trading off pieces, there's nothing that necessarily says, let's not trade Mike Minor to a team that's, you know, a playoff team, and he could get put into a better situation there. So it's not totally unforeseen that he keeps getting a lot of run as the season goes on. Why don't we move into Chuck's next fringe player?
Well, my fringe player is Matt Caesar, who is already 27 years old. That might surprise some people, but he was like Mr. Everything college football player for Villanova University. He was like quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and defensive player all wrapped in one. And so his baseball career got started late, and part of my interest in him also comes from the fact that I think the Cubs use some of their resources oddly, meaning that I don't understand, you know, Schwarber ending up in the outfield doesn't make good sense, having to trade away Soler when he hasn't really gotten a chance. And Matt Caesar's the latest guy they had to trade away. They traded him to the Padres. Now, one of my Twitter followers sent me a question this week that I thought was interesting and pertained to this. His name is Matt Reed. He's at Matt KFR. And he asks, is there any tips on trading for steals? Seems to be the category I can't get a hold of. And I mentioned to him that I would look towards teams that produce a lot of steals, like the Brewers and like the Padres, where Matt Caesar got traded to. Now, he hasn't attempted a steal yet this year, but just a couple years ago, he had over 20 steals in the minors. He's got a 50-plus steal minor league season. And he's got some pretty good plate skills is what it looks like in the minors, which doesn't necessarily translate and hasn't yet, but he hasn't gotten regular playing time. So I'm wondering if you guys think I'm completely stoned or freebasing, or if I'm reaching in thinking that in certain instances, Matt Caesar would be a good pickup right now, and in other instances, all other instances really, he should be monitored. What do you think, Evan?
I think it's a great name, actually, because, I mean, we, like I said, we just spent a bunch of time talking about everybody getting hurt, and Jankowski's out, Spangenberg was playing a little bit of outfield, he started the past three games in the infield, there's going to be a spot for him to play, and I think it's a fantastic call. I just wonder what is... I totally agree with you not understanding the Cubs, and I really don't want to troll them. That's not really what we're trying to do here. We're trying to talk about Matt Caesar's value. I think in leagues where at-bats is positive, you know, currency, where anybody with a pulse really plays, I think that's kind of what you want. I wouldn't be shooting in like a 12-teamer or anything crazy like that, but I think he's good late roster glue. Well, he's the opposite of staff glue. He's roster glue.
And how about you, Ben? What are your thoughts on Matt Caesar?
I mean, I was a big fan of Caesar coming into last year because I thought he'd be able to get significant playing time. And then when Schwarber went down, I went to grab him in a lot of different leagues because I was like, oh, the Cubs are going to be smart. They're going to play him, and he's got a lot of potential. And they didn't really play him as much, so I got a little disappointed. But I think in San Diego, he'll get the opportunity to play a lot, and he'll get to demonstrate some of the skills he has. I do wish that he'd be able to get a little bit more run on the base paths out there, but I'm not sure if that's exactly what's going to happen in San Diego, given the adversity to running overall as a team that they seem to get. But we'll see what... We'll see what happens. I think he's a good fringe player, like this topic is talking about. I think he's a good player to keep in the back of your mind, and a guy that if he starts to heat up, you should go grab him, because I think that there's a lot of room for him to be able to play given the outfield situation in San Diego.
I also want to mention that early on when he got traded to San Diego, and I don't know that that's happened against righties and lefties, etc., but he has definitely been leading off a lot of the time that he's been playing. And another good thing about these lower teams that we don't attempt to focus on, but come into focus when we talk about fringe players, is that they offer a lot more opportunity than teams that are racked and stacked. The opportunity is for a fringe guy to come into the Nats lineup and be in a, you know, prominent role just isn't there because they're loaded. And San Diego is anything but loaded. So, you know, I wanted to bring Matt Caesar up and to people's attention and not to forget about him, because it really wasn't, you know, a trade that was really focused on in the national media per se. So don't forget about Matt Caesar. And Ben, let's talk about your fringe dude.
Well, I have a few, but Ben Gamel is a player that I really want to be able to try to talk about, mainly because he's just had such a good start to the season, and he didn't start up in the bigs, mainly because Mitch Haniger was in Seattle's outfield. But Ben Gamel was a player that they got last year. He was a player that I liked in the Yankees system. He's a player that I really like now in Seattle's system. I think he has the ability to start once Haniger comes back. I think that he's a good type of player. He has decent power that he's shown off a little bit this year. He's only got two home runs, but I think he's able to get to the double digits. He's not great on the base pass, but he knows how to take some walks. He knows how to get runs, and he's hitting high in the batting order. He's hitting second for Seattle right now. So while Mitch Haniger could come back and take the number two spot in the batting order, he still should be able to be put into a prominent overall role, I think. And I do think that Ben Gamel is a player to keep an eye on in deeper leagues. This year, he's 21 for 66. He's already taken 12 walks, so he's got an OBP of 423. He's got 12 RBIs and 14 runs during the time that he's been up. He's just performing real well given the amount of playing time he's had. What are your thoughts on this, Chuck?
Well, I've been all over Ben Gamel as far as we've talked about him a lot on the other podcast I do for FWFB. And I've used him in my 12-team league that also has an option that I might be able to keep him as a minor leaguer next year if he doesn't amass enough at bats. So I picked him up for that purpose, and he played so well after he got called up that I had to put him in my lineup, and I was benching significant players. That team happens to be loaded for me offensively. So I was, you know, I benched Alex Bregman for a week so I could play Ben Gamel. I would say this, the thing that I don't like about Ben Gamel is that from afar, like from the TV view, he looks an awful lot like Motter. And so I never know which player is up when I'm, you know, scrolling through the different games and I just see a bit of it, which is also my pet peeve about Rajai Davis and Chris Davis being on exactly the same team. Because when I see Davis is up on the bottom line, I want to see Chris Davis bat. And it's Rajai Davis, who I never really wanted to watch bat anyway, until he gets on the bases. There's no reason to even watch him. So anyway, my point being is that I am a big proponent of Ben Gamel, and I think he's one of those guys that's going to accumulate stats all across the board that it's going to go very unrecognized because of him playing in Seattle and playing on the West Coast and outside of two-thirds of our normal time zones. So I think Ben Gamel is someone you really need to watch both for this year and next year because he's playing himself into a role in Seattle's outfield and in their future.
And what about you, Evan? What were your thoughts on Ben Gamel?
Well, I mean, you had mentioned we were doing a little talking offline. Guillermo, pronounce his last name for me.
Heredia.
Yeah, that dude. So I mean, he's, you know, kind of sticking around right now. And if I'm looking at roster resource correctly, it looks like they're down a bench bet, like, because they've got so many pitching issues. They only have three hitters, which I thought most major league teams carried four. Maybe I'm stupid, stoned, whatever. But I really like what Gamel's done. Three of his last six games, which have been on the road, he's had multi-hit games. And I do think there is a little bit of playing time left once Haniger comes back. But Haniger is going to be, I mean, I saw he was hitting off of a tee was the last update that we had. I mean, he already has 79 plate appearances this year. He had 57 back in 2016. So I don't know what magic plate appearance limit you were looking for there, Chuck, but I think he's going to blow right past it because he's going to have a job.
Yeah, I need him to stay under 150 major league plate appearances. So I guess that seems pretty unlikely. But I didn't really know for sure how much he was going to play when he originally got called up. So, and right now he's playing well enough that it's conceivable that I could keep him on the cheap next year, even if he wasn't a minor leaguer. But we'll have to see exactly how extensive this run becomes. that he's on right now, because he's been a very, very legitimate any size league player since he's got called up to the bigs.
Well, we have had a couple of players go into DL today, so we should probably talk about them just to see what they do have for fantasy impact, them for that this and for the rest of the team. So some of the players that have got hurt today, we've already talked about Carlos Carrasco. A.J. Pollock went to DL. Carlos Gomez is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, so he's going to DL, and Hunter Pence is going to DL. Now, I do know that Chuck doesn't like Hunter Pence, I think, as per our podcast last week or so, or maybe a couple weeks ago. But why don't we start off with Pollock? What does Pollock's injury do for him and for the rest of the Arizona outfield?
Well, what it does for him is that it brings back flashbacks of last season when he tried to come back and it was the groin that put him back on the shelf, and he missed the last month of the season with that. And also what it does is, if you're looking for speed, which hearkening back to Chuck's Twitter friend, Pollock, you know, is kind of a guy. I don't know how many home runs we were kind of expecting him to hit this year, given the elbow injury and just his overall power profile, the humidor, you know, whatever random variable you wanted to throw in the conversation. But the speed was kind of the thing that was going to float him near the top. And if the groin injury is going to hamper him in that department, I wonder what it does for his player rater numbers or just overall fantasy value.
What about you, Chuck? What are your thoughts on this exactly?
Well, I heard the description that after the game he was despondent because it gave him a flashback to what last year's injury was. So for Pollock himself, I think amongst people that play fantasy baseball, he's now going to carry the stigma for the next couple years. He would have to be healthy for 2 to 3 years after this for his value not to be crushed by the thought that he is a supreme injury risk. As far as what goes on in Arizona now, they don't really, their roster doesn't really bode all that well for handling this. From an offensive depth standpoint, I think Brandon Drury probably is a beneficiary of getting a lot of extra time. I wonder if they would consider moving Chris Owings back to getting some outfield starts. Maybe their backup catcher, but the guy they seem to really like, Chris Herman, maybe he plays a little bit more in the outfield. I think there's some interesting mechanisms going to work for the Diamondbacks within this injury. But at the same time, you know, the West is kind of wide open, especially, you know, for to move up into second place and maybe stay in wildcard contention. And I think this is kind of a crushing injury to an Arizona team that's really bounced back well this year. So I do kind of feel bad for him. I mean, David Peralta's played pretty well. You know, I don't really believe that their Cuban outfielder that plays left, I don't think he's really bounced back.
Tomas.
Yeah,
he's been terrible. Yeah, and he's sitting on Sundays. That's like a thing now.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's opportunity within Arizona for someone to take that job and run with it while Pollock is gone. And this Pollock injury, I didn't really hear a target date on how long they think he's going to be yet.
They don't have one.
They didn't even know from the one update I was looking at whether that he was 100% going to go on the DL, but I think everybody's kind of thinking that way.
He's already been put on the DL. He got put on late this afternoon.
Okay, I missed that. The one thing real quick before toss it to Ben and get his thoughts, I think the name that was kind of absent in the whirlwind that you kind of threw out for solutions here is what this kind of does for Nick Ahmed's value, who's actually been hitting fairly decent over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I didn't bring up Socrates Brito either, which I would love for him to be good, because just the idea of that of me mangling it to Socrates Burrito is really fun. But
I mean, I think that's not even comparing apples and oranges. That's like comparing apples and burritos, man. Like Ahmed's been decent. Like,
oh yeah, no, Ahmed's a guy who they seem to really like, and that sort of adds. Like I said, maybe if Owings gets playing, I did kind of mention it, because if Owings plays center field, then you know that you would get a fair amount to say the least, of Nick Ahmed at short. So,
speaking of which, I love that Chris Owings is doing so well, and we discussed him in the first podcast, and I hope everybody took that piece of advice and ran with it and then just kind of forgot everything else I've ever said. So,
nicely done.
You're welcome. Thanks.
I think that the person who's most affected outside of Pollock is Goldschmidt, because I think he loses a player who's been on base a ton. He's been getting a lot of steals, so he's been putting himself in good, you know, base running abilities for Goldschmidt to knock him in. But I think it just puts a lot of pressure on everyone else. What we could see is we could see Ketel Marte end up getting brought up if Chris Owings does move into the outfield full time. So I wouldn't be totally surprised if Ketel Marte, who was having a good AAA, or who was doing good in AAA, comes up and does play a little bit with Nick Ahmed. That's most likely what I could see happening. I don't know if you guys disagree with that aspect of it, but I do think that when Pollock comes back, if he comes back without rushing himself, he'll have to kind of hit the ground running so that he can retain some of the value that he's had early season. Because if this affects him on the base pass, that's going to be a real big loss, considering that people have already been banking on him to have a lot of steals, given what he's already done to start the season.
Right. And, I mean, what do you think he starts a game in before June 5th, which it would be three weeks from today?
I don't think he starts a game in June. I think he's back in July. I think he's back after
in June total.
I don't think he plays a game in June total. I'm pretty sure that he won't come back until right after July 4th. That's what I'm giving him. Given his injury history and given the fact that it did put him on the shelf last year, they are going to be real cautious with this because they want to be able to try to make the playoffs, given the fact of how decent the team has done this year, considering.
Well, they're slipping out of the race. They're up top.
Slipping out of the race, but they're not going to risk forcing him to come back if they're currently slipping. So that's why I think they're going to take their time.
I think it depends on how well. I mean, this rotation's pretty god-awful, and it's kind of sad to say that. Outside of Zach Greinke, I think the Diamondbacks kind of want Shelby Miller around right now, as weird as it is to say. But, yeah, this staff is kind of disgusting. I mean, I know Chuck was probably, you know, just waiting to mention Zach Godley or something stupid like that, but this is if they're going to make the playoffs, Pollock's going to need to be in the lineup.
I agree. Why don't we talk about the next player, and that is going to be Hunter Pence. What does Hunter Pence's injury do for the Giants overall? Now, the Giants have not performed well this year, but does this do anything in any aspect for any hitters in the in San Francisco?
I don't really see. You know, they've been exhausting all the options that they had organization-wise in the outfield already. And, you know, I doubt that, you know, the Kelby Tomlinsons or these people that might move to the outfield, you know, they've had such a struggle. And, boy, I bet you they wish that they had Adam Duvall back right now. But it's very difficult for me to imagine, you know, anything short of them picking Angel Pagan up that there's really going to be a fantasy impact, except for the fact that I think that this continues their spiral downward that they're on right now, and that at some point they're going to become supreme sellers of all the pieces that they can sell at the trade deadline. And on top of all of that, if I am missing someone semi-exciting, I mean, Mike Morris going to play the outfield again. I don't even know if he can do that anymore. It would be fun to try and see him do it, I guess. But the point being is that I think more so than anything, you're looking at an organization that could find itself reeling even further, considering what limited offense they had already was definitely hinging on his surge that's not going to be there now for a while. So that's where I am on it.
What about you, Evan?
No, I don't care. It sucks, but the Giants have been garbage, and I had the stat that Pence just hadn't been getting anything to hit. I could pull up those leaderboards, but, I mean, you said Giants offense, and I just kind of stopped caring, so.
Now, I think that they're going to be kind of stuck in no man's land, and I think that this hurts the value of, you know, like a Johnny Cueto, because it takes another offensive player out. It takes a decent defensive player out. So I think that, you know, it's going to put a lot more onus on Buster Posey and Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford, and there's just not a lot of other pieces in San Francisco that I'm really banking on to actually have any input or any output. So I think it's just a thing that you're probably already not banking on Pence unless you're in a deep league. So I think it's just a topic that we can move on from.
I just want to mention that the person that is helped most by this is Gorkys Hernandez, which just reinforces the fact that we probably don't need to spend any more time on the Giants offense.
So what I'm hearing is the next topic we should talk about is Tim Tebow.
I mean, if you want to talk about the dumpster fire that is the Mets, I was seeing the update that your boy G-Spot, whatever his name is, is going to get... No, Jesselman. But I'm just going to call him G-Spot from now on. Okay. Is that he may have his next start skipped and be moved to the bullpen because they just need to get this dude on track. There was talks about Amed Rosario not being considered for a call-up despite the thumb injury for Cabrera. And Steven Matz made a rehab or is going to be making a rehab appearance. So are you any way, shape, or form excited about your Mets? I know we just talked about them.
No, it's a dumpster fire. I'm not happy about it. I'm going to stay tough and hope for the best, but it's not good. When DeGrom's whip is like north of 1.3 and his ERA is north of 4, I'm not very happy.
At least he's striking guys out. And
yeah, well,
a ton
I can
of
only
them.
Imagine what would happen if he wasn't. So
he would be Matt Harvey? Question mark.
that's possible. But yeah, the Mets are in a bad spot right now. Yeah, the only good players that you really have in a roster are Conforto and Bruce, and outside of that, there's not a lot of fantasy goodness. So I'd rather just move on. I do want to know what you guys think could come of the Carlos Gomez injury. I think this kind of cements the fact that when Belcher comes back within the next week or so, that you're going to have Joey Gallo, as we had talked about off the pod, saying as a player that's going to stay in the lineup at least for the next six plus weeks and probably longer. Do you guys disagree that the Gomez injury helps him significantly?
I think it cements his spot as one of the guys in their lineup. I do believe in that. I do find it interesting that I don't know well enough about Nomar Mazara in center. You know, I think the days of Shin-Soo Choo playing center are probably over.
I think the days of Shin-Soo Choo of playing outfield well in general, even in the minor leagues, wouldn't go over well. So,
yeah. So I am curious to see. You know, I think Delino DeShields can probably play center, and maybe that's where they look to get their center fielder from. So, you know, I find it hard to believe in a team that's struggling for offense that Gallo isn't going to find a way to stay in the lineup. I've really struggled to see that, which, you know, even Gomez hasn't really played particularly well. He's been a little bit better in recent weeks, but he still has been a very poor return on investment. And I was a big Carlos Gomez guy going into the year for how, you know, late he was going, and he hasn't even lived up to that kind of a billing. So, and of course, Carlos Gomez is a guy you were hoping was going to steal a lot, but he really wasn't stealing very much either. And now that he has a leg injury, you have to worry how much he's going to steal at all. So I think Gomez's value takes a big hit, and I think you get a bump to Joey Gallo. I think you get a bump to Shin-Soo Choo and a bump to Mazara and DeShields, because those are the guys that I think are going to man the positions while he's out hurt. And I do think, you know, as it heats up in Texas, it's a situation that you generally always want to keep an eye on. So there's value to be had in what remains in Texas. The guy I don't like there is Ryan Rua. I'm not a big fan of his play to begin with. You know, I liked him as a sleeper a couple years ago, and it's just never materialized. He's not hitting for much power or much average. So as far as I'm concerned, those other guys are all people that get a little bump in their production. The deeper the league is, the more valuable they're going to be. I think Joey Gallo and Ryan Schimpf are the two guys that are most hurt, and almost wrongfully, by the fact that they're low batting average guys, because they're actually pretty good OBP guys in comparison. And all those walks that those guys take is like it's the same as a catcher's batting average. It doesn't really hurt you as bad as you think it does, because they have so many less at bats than a normal player because of their really high walk rates. So
yeah,
that's my opinion on the Texas situation.
Chuck was like getting really adamant about Joey Gallo and his batting average hate and everything like that. And I just had the click in my head, is it's kind of like a Carlos Santana type thing. If Carlos Santana shaved like 40 points off his batting average. So,
all right. And lastly, what do you guys think of this Carlos Carrasco injury? Obviously we know that Chuck didn't think that he was doing as good as he was, but if he ends up on the DL, what does that do for you guys with Carrasco? Does that make you guys want to sell, given the fact that he's been injured the last couple of years? Or does this not really affect your mindset? He left the game with a pectoral strain today.
I'm going to let you go first, Evan.
Well, we all know how you feel, so I mean, it's not like you're burying the lead or anything like that. I like Carrasco, and I would be trying to acquire. I don't know pectoral and, you know, what you would be seeing as a, you know, a time frame. He's going to go on the DL because everybody goes on the DL. That just is what it is. But I'd be buying on Carrasco. And I know Chuck is going to want to fight me. So I'll be the little devil on the shoulder telling you to buy Carlos Carrasco, and Chuck will be the angel to save your season.
And that's actually incorrect. If I had Carlos Carrasco right now, which it would have been possible for me to have Carrasco in certain situations. I don't own any pieces of him. But if I had Carrasco, I would be holding him right now at almost all costs, just because he has so much upside when he is pitching. And since the pitching landscape is a complete minefield all the way around for the most part, you know, I think what 8 out of every 10 owners would say that their pitching has been really stricken through either very bad performance or injuries. So I think you have to hold Carrasco, because pitchers like this that are injured that have this much upside that could give you such a boost if they did have, 12 to 16 starts in a row of good starts down the stretch, I would not sell Carrasco under any circumstances. And it's not that I don't like Carrasco. It's that I don't think the injuries always get put into his draft day price, which to me is odd. But at a time when everybody that we thought was durable is not, you have to recognize all the upside that Carrasco has if he's healthy for a stretch of the season.
I personally like Carrasco, and I don't really want to sell. I don't think that the injury necessarily makes me want to sell either, but it's definitely something that will sit in the back of my mind if I get an owner to inquire about the price. I would still sell him at face value. I do think that he's coming close to cementing himself as a top 10 pitcher when he's healthy, but he's kind of turning into a Rich Hill type thing that, you know, he's going to be hurt X amount of times every single year, but he'll be good when he actually pitches. Now, Rich Hill hasn't done that this year, but Rich Hill had done that last year to the utmost degree, that whenever he pitched really well. But, you know, getting 15 starts is a hassle. We've seen Strasburg do it as well before. So I think it just really depends on how long he's out, and if this does anything to make him have to wait to build up his stamina again or anything like that. If he's out for an extended period of time, that may be the only reason I'm looking to sell in like a redraft. All right, did you guys have anything else to add on any of the topics that we've talked about today? What about you, Chuck?
Well, the only thing I would like to add is on our topic about talking about the 10-day DL, it's come up through multiple media outlets, and I saw the interview that that Dave Roberts had in L.A., and they basically are admitting that with their seven or eight starters that are all fragile, they're all ceramic, that they're going to be rotating kind of who has a fake injury. I mean, it's basically, it's been implied and obviously not stated. But that is how multiple media outlets have read into it, because, you know, Maeda is somebody who's used to more time off than he's had. Brandon McCarthy is just coming back from his 10-day DL stint. Now, Maeda's on the 10-day DL. You can expect that Rich Hill is not going to pitch, you know, a month and a half or two straight probably without, you know, having to nurse his fragile fingers. So I think you're looking at a situation when we talk about this 10-day DL and the effects that it has on fantasy baseball and the effects it can have on your teams. Just remember, you know, even a guy like Alex Wood is looking at a huge injury jump, huge innings jump this year from what he's had in recent years. So I think you're going to find that this has a wider scope effect on what happens throughout the year than even we spoke about earlier. That is all.
Evan, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
At FWFB, but really the best place to find me and my takes is right here. And I just wanted to say thank you for everybody that keeps tuning in. I'm surprised that anybody listens to me talk and then clicks back in a week. So I wanted to thank the listeners out there. Keep pumping us with 5-star reviews so we can send you a mug or a shirt or a hug or, you know, just anything. So thanks for being there.
And what about you, Chuck? Where can you be reached and what are you working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It. And between every Monday and Wednesday, I get out an Of Note article for the FWFB site. And as you can tell, it will be filled with a lot of venom towards some of the things I see going on in fantasy baseball. But it will always also have encouragement because we're all fighting the same kind of battles. So your teams that are struggling, you know, keep up the good fight the best that you can, etc. If you have any need for advice or want to share thoughts or argue with me on any of my many reactionary points that I offer on this podcast, feel free to go to at Just Chucking It and fire away. I am not easily offended, so you can feel free to throw barbs at me, and we'll fence back and forth if you would like to do so. Okay.
And I can be reached at BBrandisFWFB. I currently am just hosting this podcast. Occasionally during summer, I will be doing fantasy basketball podcasts with Eric Mackey, especially around the draft. Occasionally, we'll be writing baseball articles for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. As Evan was saying, we always appreciate getting rate and reviews. All the 5-star reviews help us immensely. We're always extremely grateful for everything that our fans do. It's always nice that we have fans that will approach us either on Twitter or in person if they're actually able to, and they tell us how much they like our work.
Yeah, that was, not to cut you off, but there was one of our fans who saw Matt Thompson tweet something out at whatever minor league game he was at, and the guy happened to be in the stands, and he went and he found Matt and sat down and chatted with him. So I thought that was super cool. And
I agree. I definitely think that. It's always nice when we have people reach out to us on Twitter and ask us questions, whether it's for baseball, basketball, any sport, and we're always building the Friends with Fantasy Benefit group larger and larger, and we're always extremely appreciative of that. So thank you very much. And from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.